Welcome. You are listening to Steele Talkin'. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. You know it's what I love to do on a Sunday night, is sit here and gab with you. There's so much to talk about. You know, I used to read the New York Times all the time. I still take the newspaper online. And I used to be in love with the opinion page. I wanted to see what people were thinking and how they were assessing how America is doing. But it's been a while. And then I came across an article today that was really quite remarkable. It's the title of this in the opinion page on June 4th, which was yesterday. The Gospel of Work is Thin Gruel, an ethically empty solution to meet our essential need for belonging and meaning. And it is starving us as individuals and communities. So when I first read that, I said, I have to finish this article. Now, this is by Carolyn Chin, and it goes on to say, people often wonder why a sociologist of religion like me, that's Carolyn Chin, studies Silicon Valley. Isn't it a godless place, they ask? That's what I thought too, she says, until I moved there. As I write in my guest essay for Time's Opinion, I learned that the industry is actually driven by energies, that if it were almost any place else, we would call religious, like worship, faith, and sacrifice. Like most scholars of religion, I had studied religion by looking at religious things, individuals, communities, institutions, texts, and practices that are associated with a formal religious tradition such as Islam, Christianity, or Buddhism. But that approach doesn't help us fully understand the American religious experience today, when the fastest growing religious category consists of people who don't even identify with a religion. American rates of religious affiliation have plummeted to their lowest point in the past 73 years. And nowhere are they lower than in knowledge industry hubs like Silicon Valley, where high-skilled jobs are growing the fastest. If religion is in decline, I wondered, she said, then what are Americans worshiping now? What has become our new religion? For many professionals, the answer is work. Work provides the identity, belonging, meaning, and purpose that faith traditions once did. As Americans, we often think that we individually choose what we believe in and what we worship. But as a sociologist, I am trained to look for the social context that surround and condition our individual choices. She goes on to say, I urge you to think about how our social institutions, even the secular ones, spiritually form us and direct our devotion as a society. Those of us who hold professional jobs in places like San Francisco, Seattle, New York, and Washington are subtly but firmly being encouraged to make work our alpha institution, the sun around which our lives orbit. She says, as my research bears out, the theocracy of work is hurting our democracy. Let me say that again. The theocracy of work is hurting our democracy, our civil society, our families, and our communities. Jonathan Lowe, it's so good to have you back on here at CCO. I don't like to miss one Sunday without you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. I don't know about you, but that article I just read really moved me to my core. I never thought about a religion being based in work, right? But it's true. These corporations, small companies, small businesses even, have found a way to really make us feel as though we are family. We are part of something bigger than us, right? Than just me or just you. So what did you think about this article comparing work to a religion?
I didn't read the article itself, but I, listening to you talk about it, I understand it completely. I would probably put myself in that category. I think of when you say putting work in the context of a religion, mm-hmm. the only thing that makes me go to is being a workaholic. I think there's already a term for it. And people that, you know, they throw themselves into their work, they don't have much of an outside life. They don't have much of a, you know, going to church, going to events. Maybe they have a family, but they don't see their family as much as so other people do because they are involved in their work. They travel for it. They stay at the office for it. They dig and dive their lives into it. I just think that it's taking the word workaholic and maybe going a little bit deeper into it.
Right. I agree with that. Now, here's the thing for me that is shocking. Do you remember that movie about the man who went way into the future? He was a time traveler. They had two or three different versions of it, but he would travel either back in time, way back in time, or forward in time. And he found this one place. He went way back in time, and he found a society of people who loved each other. They were peaceful. It was like they lived in the Garden of Eden. However, there were these beasts or monsters, you may want to call them, beneath the earth, you know, where they were digging out a lot of the minerals from the earth. And all of the people that were peaceful and loving had to go and work for these horrible beasts. And I wish I could remember the name of it. But this is what reminds me of what a religion would be like. Oh, my goodness, I do apologize. My phone rang. But I'm surprised at my thought of coming up with that movie saying, oh, my gosh, that really was more like what this person is talking about in the article. And I hope if any of you know the name of this movie that I'm talking about, because there have been several iterations of it, please don't hesitate to call us at 651-461-9226. Again, that's 651-461-9226. So, Jonathan, if you were to see it from that lens, you could actually, I think you would be one of those who would say, oh, this is more of a religion than anything else. It's not just work, because this was mandatory work. And I thought maybe we were being sold this idea because of the possibility that it could become like a religion. As I sit here and I think about that movie, not time travel. What was it?
Well, if anyone knows, let me know. With the time traveling thing is that there's so many iterations of a time traveler, time traveling deal. The one that comes to mind, and you talk about a human, mm-hmm. Technically this isn't a human, it's an alien in human form, but it's Doctor Who. And Doctor Who going through time with a companion, with that doctor's companion, whoever they may be, mm-hmm. looking at different events, different ways that humanity has been affected or will be affected by different events in history. But you've got so many, you know, the time traveler's wife, and like you said, many, many, many movies have been made about this. And I just think it's interesting to try to connect everything together and try to come around a central idea that work is a religion. It's an interesting concept to me. I don't know if that was the goal of the concept, but maybe it's out there. I don't know.
Well, this movie, I finally found it. It's called The Time Machine from 1960. And this professor had figured out a way for time travel. And he would go all the way forward as much as he, you know, felt comfortable with. And he would even go further backwards in time. And it was just quite remarkable. So this article reminded me of this movie. Because I remember watching it going, oh, my gosh, look how time would change. You know, how the world, how we thought, how we lived, how our families existed were all different in each of this traveler's and in each of the times that he traveled to all of these different places. So who knows? Maybe we were fed this information at one time because they wanted us to think as of work as, you know, that you actually wanted people to think that work is a religion, because that's exactly what that movie reminds me of. So there you go. And I know we have to take a break. I want to let you know that our first guest coming up at 7:20 is me. And I can't wait to talk with you. If you'd like to call us and maybe mention or say something about the article that I just read to you from the opinion page of the New York Times, you are welcome to do so. Phone number is 651-461-9226. Again, that's 651-461-9226. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:23 right now. My goodness, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us every Sunday night or whenever you can. We sure appreciate it. It's been 23 years and I'm still having a ball with you. All right, I believe we are talking about religion when it comes to work, that work is our new religion, according to the opinion page in the New York Times on June 4th, yesterday. And I was really quite in awe of that article because it kind of brought some things to mind as I look back over my own religious experience and could see some of those parallels. And if you'd like to call us in and ask some questions or you want to text us, feel free at 651-461-9226. Julie is joining us from Minneapolis. Julie, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Say,
hi,
it's
Julie.
Wonderful to hear you on Sunday night. Sometimes you're there and sometimes you're not, so I'm glad you're there.
I am glad I'm here, too. Thank you so much, Julie. What is your comment?
You know, the first thing I thought of, Geraldine, was if you make work your religion, who are you once you retire? Are you worthless? Are you without identity? Also, you know, before COVID, we had about 7.5 million people on disability, people that had paid into Social Security and had earned the right to collect disability payments. And now with COVID and long COVID, we have people in their 40s and 50s that had to quit work. Are they doomed to not have an identity because they're not working? So I think it's normal that part of your identity is with your job. I think it's okay. But when it's the extreme of making it your religion, isn't that going to get you into trouble?
Well, that's a really great question. And I think this is how I would address it. First of all, how do we define a job today? You know, it used to be my father and my mother's generation that you would go to work for 8 hours a day or more. You were part of a union. You would get paid well enough to buy a home and a car and put your children in college. Today, a job means something completely different. You can stay home and use your voice to do voiceovers for commercials. There are so many different ways that we work today than what our parents did decades ago. And so when you look
at it
from that perspective, maybe everyone is working. It just depends on what they call a job.
Right. But I would warn you, you know, don't tie up your whole identity in making money. You know, we all need to make money to live. But, you know, part of it, I suppose, is my age, and I was brought up in the church. It just strikes me as lacking something. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying, Julie, and I agree with you on that, that sometimes we really lose sight of what religion really is, right? Or what we learned what religion was when we were children. And so today, when you hear that, you know, the numbers are down like 75%, that, I mean, it's just remarkable. So yes, young people specifically are searching for something totally different when it comes to quote unquote religion. And they are finding ways to develop it and define it in their own heart and mind. I don't know how dangerous that is. I made sure that my children had a place to be and that they understood the faith that we were a part of, their father and I.
Mm-hmm.
But today, a lot of people are walking away from churches. It is not giving the young people what they not even what they expect, what they need. They may not even know what they need, Julie, right? They may not.
Yeah,
however,
you
hopefully
have to make
they
church
can.
Relevant, you know.
Yeah.
Have to make it
so
relevant.
Do you go
Thank
to church?
You. I'm kind of more of a church person. I have some transportation and some health issues. But I'm trying to go back. I think it does give meaning to life. I think it's part of the ultimate meaning in life. And but that's the first thing I thought of, Geraldine, was the retirement thing. Because if work is your religion, whether you work out of home or in an office, who are you if you lose your job? That's my concern. Whether you're religious or not, whether you believe in God or not, you have to have identity out of the way you make money. You know what I'm saying?
Julie, I do know what you're saying. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, so Jonathan, here we are as we sit and we hear from Julie about, okay, what happens to you when you're not working anymore? In America, I don't see it that way. There are so many active seniors that may not be working in a business, but they could be consultants and so much more. They are engaged. Their minds are engaged, but they don't call it work. Not the ones I know. So that's interesting. How do you see yourself when it comes to the point where you retire? Would you still find something else to do to work?
I don't know at this point. I'm not the type of person that does the, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to be doing in 30 years or in 20 years or whenever my retirement age comes around. I'm more of the fly by the seat of my pants, doing things day to day, doing things week to week. So I haven't, to be completely honest, I have not looked that far down the road. If I do retire, I hope that I can stay. I don't know. I'd like to say I want to stay active in some way, but my lifestyle that I have currently, I don't know if that would suit me. I don't know if that matches up with how I am now. Would I change in the future? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I encourage you to really think on that as you move forward in your age. Just think about it every day and find a way to say, hey, I will find joy in this. And if that is joy for you, then could it be your religion? So there you go. Thank you so much, Jonathan. And thank you, Julie, for calling in. We're going to take a break and come back with some weather and not so what a maybe a couple of minutes. We'll be back. It is now 7:34 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steel Talk, and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. Well, my first guest tonight is Sarah Foster. She's an analyst at Bankrate.com. And what are we talking about? Well, as you well know, women are more likely to feel stressed about their finances than men. And then the article goes on to say, here's what to do about it. So let's just stop for a moment and really think on that. Women are more likely to feel stressed about their finances than men. Well, joining us to really bring clarity to this article that I'm reading, Sarah Foster is joining us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. Okay. Bottom line is, we have been more likely to feel stressed out about finances than men since the beginning of time, I think. So this isn't like a new suggestion or a new thing we need to be aware of. It's been around forever. Do you agree?
No. Well, I think what's really important here, especially talking about our findings where specifically, 46% of women say that money is likely to negatively impact their mental health versus 38% of men. It's number one to focus on what this looks like at an individual picture. By negatively impacting their mental health, women mention, all respondents in our survey mention that this can either amount to feelings of anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, even loss of sleep and depression. So obviously, this is a really important issue when it's impacting our mental health, but I think it's for reasons really both of the past and the present. I think obviously the past several years, especially in light of the coronavirus pandemic, have been very challenging in the face of our finances. But for women especially, they're dealing with issues like the gender pay gap and even, you know, the overall caregiving responsibility, which I think makes it even more challenging for women than men.
Absolutely. And of course, the pay disparities between men and women has also been painful. We were really on the move, you know, helping to bring the equality between men and women and how much we make. And then all of a sudden, like you said, when the pandemic hit, things really changed in our country and in the world. So where do we stop and say, if we're going to get ahead as women, we know what the disparity is. We haven't changed it yet. We're not equal to men's, the amount that they make for their job. We're not there yet. So how do we encourage ourselves and keep moving up and forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And this is an important question. And I think it's really important first to just recognize here that if you're stressed about your finances and you're a woman, there's really nothing wrong with you at all, and you're not alone. I think, obviously, it's incredibly difficult to save and invest, especially for long-term goals like retirement for all Americans, but especially when you're facing something like a gender pay gap, which gives you less money to work with in your budget. But what's really powerful, I think, especially in light of our finances, is celebrating those successes that we do make and then not being afraid to start small. And so, you know, kind of the advice that lots of mental health experts give, I think also kind of applies with our personal finance, where when we're setting our financial goals, we want to make sure we're separating those things that we can control from what we can't control. So obviously the inflationary picture, volatile markets that we've gotten in the past few months, that's not something that unfortunately any of us can prevent. But we can focus on those overall goals that we have with our personal finances, hopefully by starting small and remembering that, you know, no step is too small really to make a difference.
The coronavirus pandemic derailed women's equal pay progress, and I mentioned that a minute ago. But how did they do? How did the pandemic do that? Why is it that we were delayed during the pandemic and there were still men that were doing very well?
Well, I think what's really interesting in talking about the coronavirus pandemic is this idea that it really became a she session, which is where, you know, the downturn specifically befell women. And I think that's for maybe two reasons. Number one, a lot of these service sector positions that were cut surrounding stay-at-home orders, restrictions, but women predominantly worked those positions. And then the second kind of aspect is that caretaking. Lots of women dropped out of the labor force during the pandemic, either because children were out of school, you know, staying at home, they took on the homeschooling responsibility, or because loved ones, older Americans, fell ill or they felt, you know, the responsibility to take care of them. And so we're still kind of seeing the lingering impacts of that today. Even 2+ years almost since the pandemic began, pretty close to 1 million women are out of the labor force still today. And so it's a challenge that's, you know, still ongoing even long after the pandemic first began.
What did you hear about women when they knew they could get a weekly check from the government to help buoy them, you know, help them keep moving at least equally? I'm just curious to know if those moments of the pandemic when they were getting those checks in, because I've heard so many people say, well, you know, a lot of these families got those checks and they really should be in the buildings working, where we weren't in the buildings working for 2 years almost. So it's frustrating when you hear something like that. So it feels as though men are not taking on nearly as much of the challenge of raising a family as the woman does. Even though she may have degrees, she is a professional, it's just so different between the two. It doesn't seem to be getting closer to being equal.
Yeah, well, I will say is around every stimulus check iteration, Bankrate ran a poll where we asked survey respondents what they were planning to do with the money. And overwhelmingly, they said that that money would impact their personal finances. It would make it everyday essentials more attainable. I think and almost all of them mentioned that they were going to use the money on those necessary expenses. So I think that's really important here to remember that money that was sent out during the pandemic was very helpful for so many people, and women included, who are facing, you know, difficult economic situations. But I think this idea, especially when we're talking about caregiving and caretaking, is especially important, not only just because that responsibility falls on women, but also how we know that it can impact their earnings, especially when women have to take time away from their job, maybe when they have to work fewer hours. A really interesting analysis from the National Women's Law Center found that the pay gap for moms is even wider than the pay gap for women overall, at about 75 cents versus 82 cents for all women. So it's a really interesting kind of topic here, especially as we, obviously raising a family is something that's so important for so many women. But obviously we are not really in a position here where we're seeing that it doesn't impact their earnings opportunities even when they do take on that responsibility.
Exactly. Well said. I think my frustration is that no matter how hard as women, for women, we are constantly trying to move up the ladder or at least to be able to take care of our families without worrying where is the next, you know, meal coming from and that sort of thing. My frustration is that our relationship, women, I would say a lot of us can sit in circles in a restaurant and sit and really lament about how difficult it is for us to be healthy money-wise, right? To be healthy with our money. And I think that's me. I grew up in a family where my father was killed by a drunk driver when I was 14 years old. And so my mother really took it on, and she was there for us, you know, worked so hard. She was working two jobs and in college at the same time. It was a very, very difficult time. At the same time that all of that was happening, the whole idea of money and her not being able to get a credit card, not because her credit was bad, she had excellent credit, but because she was a woman. There was a time, right, when we couldn't get a credit card without a husband. So here we are today, and I was not good with money. I was the girl that should have had on the T-shirt that said, "What do you mean I don't have any money in my bank account? I still have checks," right? So when I look back on my understanding of being healthy with my money, right, taking good care, being responsible, it took me years. It took me about 7 years to really understand what I needed and had to do, absolutely had to do. So are we still at that point, or have we grown and learned how to manage that money, how to keep that money, how to grow that money?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you highlighted a very interesting point at the beginning, which I think also kind of illustrates just how many hats that women feel like they have to wear. I was speaking with several women for this story that I wrote about this very subject, and many of them mentioned, you know, in addition to feeling like the overall caretaker for their household, they're also the ones, you know, making those decisions. They want to be, you know, the best money manager. They want to be the best wife. They want to be the best partner, the best parents. I think, obviously.
It is now 7:34 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Well, my first guest tonight is Sarah Foster. She's an analyst at Bankrate.com. And what are we talking about? Well, as you well know, women are more likely to feel stressed about their finances than men. And then the article goes on to say, here's what to do about it. So let's just stop for a moment and really think on that. Women are more likely to feel stressed about their finances than men. Well, joining us to really bring clarity to this article that I'm reading, Sarah Foster is joining us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. Okay. Bottom line is, we have been more likely to feel stressed out about finances than men since the beginning of time, I think. So this isn't like a new suggestion or a new thing we need to be aware of. It's been around forever. Do you agree?
No. Well, I think what's really important here, especially talking about our findings where specifically, 46% of women say that money is likely to negatively impact their mental health versus 38% of men. It's number one to focus on what this looks like at an individual picture. By negatively impacting their mental health, women mention, all respondents in our survey mentioned that this can either amount to feelings of anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, even loss of sleep and depression. So obviously, this is a really important issue when it's impacting our mental health, but I think it's for reasons really both of the past and the present. I think obviously the past several years, especially in light of the coronavirus pandemic, have been very challenging in the face of our finances. But for women especially, they're dealing with issues like the gender pay gap and even, you know, the overall caregiving responsibility, which I think makes it even more challenging for women than men.
Absolutely. And of course, the pay disparities between men and women has also been painful. We were really on the move, you know, helping to bring the equality between men and women and how much we make. And then all of a sudden, like you said, when the pandemic hit, things really changed in our country and in the world. So where do we stop and say, if we're going to get ahead as women, we know what the disparity is. We haven't changed it yet. We're not equal to men's, the amount that they make for their job. We're not there yet. So how do we encourage ourselves and keep moving up and forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And this is an important question. And I think it's really important first to just recognize here that if you're stressed about your finances and you're a woman, there's really nothing wrong with you at all, and you're not alone. I think, obviously, it's incredibly difficult to save and invest, especially for long-term goals like retirement for all Americans, but especially when you're facing something like a gender pay gap, which gives you less money to work with in your budget. But what's really powerful, I think, especially in light of our finances, is celebrating those successes that we do make and then not being afraid to start small. And so, you know, kind of the advice that lots of mental health experts give, I think also kind of applies with our personal finance, where when we're setting our financial goals, we want to make sure we're separating those things that we can control from what we can't control. So obviously the inflationary picture, volatile markets that we've gotten in the past few months, that's not something that unfortunately any of us can prevent. But we can focus on those overall goals that we have with our personal finances, hopefully, by starting small and remembering that, you know, no step is too small, really, to make a difference.
The coronavirus pandemic derailed women's equal pay progress, and I mentioned that a minute ago. But how did they do? How did the pandemic do that? Why is it that we were delayed during the pandemic and there were still men that were doing very well?
Well, I think what's really interesting in talking about the coronavirus pandemic is this idea that it really became a she session, which is where, you know, the downturn specifically befell women. And I think that's for maybe two reasons. Number one, a lot of these service sector positions that were cut surrounding stay-at-home orders, restrictions, but women predominantly worked those positions. And then the second kind of aspect is that caretaking. Lots of women dropped out of the labor force during the pandemic, either because children were out of school, you know, staying at home, they took on the homeschooling responsibility, or because loved ones, older Americans, fell ill or they felt, you know, the responsibility to take care of them. And so we're still kind of seeing the lingering impacts of that today, even 2+ years almost since the pandemic began. Pretty close to 1 million women are out of the labor force still today. And so it's a challenge that's, you know, still ongoing even long after the pandemic first began.
What did you hear about women when they knew they could get a weekly check from the government to help buoy them, you know, help them keep moving, at least equally? I'm just curious to know if those moments of the pandemic when they were getting those checks in, because I've heard so many people say, well, you know, a lot of these families got those checks and they really should be in the buildings working, where we weren't in the buildings working for 2 years almost. So it's frustrating when you hear something like that. So it feels as though men are not taking on nearly as much of the challenge of raising a family as the woman does. Even though she may have degrees, she is a professional, it's just so different between the two. It doesn't seem to be getting closer to being equal.
Yeah, well, I will say is around every stimulus check iteration, Bankrate ran a poll where we asked survey respondents what they were planning to do with the money. And overwhelmingly, they said that that money would impact their personal finances. It would make it everyday essentials more attainable. I think and almost all of them mentioned that they were going to use the money on those necessary expenses. So I think that's really important here to remember that money that was sent out during the pandemic was very helpful for so many people, and women included, who are facing, you know, difficult economic situations. But I think this idea, especially when we're talking about caregiving and caretaking, is especially important, not only just because that responsibility falls on women, but also how we know that it can impact their earnings, especially when women have to take time away from their job, maybe when they have to work fewer hours. A really interesting analysis from the National Women's Law Center found that the pay gap for moms is even wider than the pay gap for women overall, at about 75 cents versus 82 cents for all women. So it's a really interesting kind of topic here, especially as we, obviously raising a family is something that's so important for so many women. But obviously we are not really in a position here where we're seeing that it doesn't impact their earnings opportunities even when they do take on that responsibility.
Exactly. Well said. I think my frustration is that no matter how hard as women, for women, we are constantly trying to move up the ladder or at least to be able to take care of our families without worrying where is the next, you know, meal coming from and that sort of thing. My frustration is that Our relationship, women, I would say a lot of us can sit in circles in a restaurant and sit and really lament about how difficult it is for us to be healthy money-wise, right? To be healthy with our money. And I think that's me. I grew up in a family where my father was killed by a drunk driver when I was 14 years old. And so my mother really took it on, and she was there for us, you know, worked so hard. She was working two jobs and in college at the same time. It was a very, very difficult time. At the same time that all of that was happening, the whole idea of money and her not being able to get a credit card, not because her credit was bad, she had excellent credit, but because she was a woman. There was a time, right, when we couldn't get a credit card without a husband. So here we are today, and I was not good with money. I was the girl that should have had on the T-shirt that said, "What do you mean I don't have any money in my bank account? I still have checks," right? So when I look back on my understanding of being healthy with my money, right, taking good care, being responsible, it took me years. It took me about 7 years to really understand what I needed and had to do, absolutely had to do. So are we still at that point, or have we grown and learned how to manage that money, how to keep that money, how to grow that money?
Well, I think you highlighted a very interesting point at the beginning, which I think also kind of illustrates just how many hats that women feel like they have to wear. I was speaking with several women for this story that I wrote about this very subject, and many of them mentioned, you know, in addition to feeling like the overall caretaker for their household, they're also the ones, you know, making those decisions. They want to be, you know, the best money manager. They want to be the best wife. They want to be the best partner, the best parents. I think obviously the more hats you take on is very difficult. And especially for women, I think they mentioned that stress kind of stems from these overall income gaps that really make it harder for them to make these decisions. And so I think, you know, obviously this financial stress is a major issue, but what's really important is recognizing that we can take these steps to hopefully help mitigate that stress. Again, it kind of goes back to not being afraid to start small. I think there's also lots of low-hanging fruit within our own lives that maybe we can turn to hopefully help us. I mean, especially if, you know, income, the loss of income, maybe even making less income than other people that you know is what's stressing you out. Maybe there's something that you have in your everyday life that you can monetize, maybe a hobby that might be worth a side hustle. I think obviously it's a little bit difficult to expect women to work multiple full-time jobs, even part-time jobs in addition, especially if they're a parent. But there's lots of these small steps that we can take that hopefully can help women overall in the end. And I think that's very important, especially when they might feel like the odds are completely stacked against them in the face of these broader societal issues like the pay gap.
Yeah, exactly. And I know I read this quote, another way to alleviate stress for women when it comes to our finances is to accept the fact that there are always going to be surprises that may come up. And I don't think I know a woman that doesn't agree with that, but it's not easy to do, is it?
And I think that's really, you know, giving yourself grace is also very important here. And in addition to speaking with women who feel stressed about their finances, I also spoke with many financial experts who are women, and they all mentioned, even the experts here, that there are times when money stresses them out. There are times when they're caught off guard by unexpected expenses. But when we step back and really realize that there are these little steps that we can take in our lives to hopefully help manage our stress and manage our budgets, those go hand in hand. And I think we'll be prepared for more of those emergency expenses, even if you can't stop them from happening.
I think another one of the crucial problems with our currency today is that we have been hearing so much about cryptocurrency. So here we are as women trying to figure out how to make this work, right? Whether you are a single mother, whether you are married or partnered, we are trying to figure out how to make it work. But when you hear over and over again that our currency could become cryptocurrency, right? I actually interviewed a woman who knew the most about cryptocurrency, and I asked her at the end of the interview, I said, so our current way of making money and saving money and, you know, being able to grow money is at stake here. Are you telling me that our way of currency today will be changed to cryptocurrency? And she said it's already in place. It's already being done as we're talking. She said you will be hearing more about this. Now, is that something that women are really paying attention to right now, is something like cryptocurrency? And if so, do we understand it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a really complicated subject, and I think I would really want to zoom out here and pull attention to maybe two of our surveys. I think that were really interesting, where women mentioned that they were worrying about almost every kind of money concern except of their investments, which men tended to say that they were more likely to worry about their investments. And I think what that shows is also kind of a lingering inequality, because another survey that we ran from May found that 50% of men say that they're invested in stocks. They have stock-related investments versus 37% of women. So I think while that's not to say that there aren't women out there who are taking charge, who are investing, who are, you know, finding ways to make additional income, especially in the face of these broader issues like inflation, I think what this really shows is that, you know, there is this inequality. And it's not to say that maybe women aren't educated about the subject. I think we can't underestimate the impact that the gender pay gap has had on some of these goals. I think when you're used to making significantly less money than even men, I think even taking some of those steps can be a lot more difficult in your budget to really allocate that money.
Well, I tell you, Sarah Foster, analyst at bankrate.com is who I'm speaking with tonight about this really important subject about how women are handling our money. And it's really a stressful time in our country. That's for sure. My final question for you, Sarah, you talked about fine ways of monetizing your hobbies and that sort of thing, or starting a side hustle. We are the queens or the leaders of side hustles, right? I really believe that. I, not only myself have I had a side hustle, but I have so many female friends that are married, some that are single mothers, and so much more that have side hustles. Tell me more about that and the importance for women.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think overall, you know, starting a side hustle is just something that might be a little bit easier to make additional income than picking up a second part-time job or even another full-time job. I think if you're doing something in your life that's already worth something, it's really a low-hanging fruit option for you to maybe find a way that you can monetize it. I think I spoke with a woman for this piece who mentioned that as a hobby, she really enjoyed making jewelry, making shea butters, making lotions. I think, and during an unfortunate instance when she had to take time away from her job due to a medical emergency, she thought to herself that, hey, this is something that maybe I can sell. And it ended up, you know, making a pretty significant chunk of change that will hopefully help her, along with, you know, that disability check that only recovers about 60% of her income. So it's really, again, it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about all along, where we can't deny that there are instances about our finances that will always stress us out. We can't prevent the uncontrollable things like inflation, market volatility, and even emergency expenses. But we can take some of these small steps to hopefully limit the stress and make us feel like we are more in control of our money. And I think a side hustle is a really important way to do that.
Sarah Foster, I'm so glad you were able to join us tonight. A lot of good information. Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. All right, that is Sarah Foster, analyst at Bankrate. If you want to know more information about it, I do know that Bankrate actually did a poll. They really put a lot into this poll to really figure out that, you know, how the numbers compare between men and women when it comes to finances and how we handle our money. So just try to pick this up. It's called Bankrate Poll. It's really an interesting read. We're going to come back in just a moment. It is now 7:56 here at WCCO. Thanks so much for sticking and staying with us this hour. I do want to mention that there are more than 2 in 5 women, or 46%, that say money issues have negatively affected their mental health, prompting feelings of anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and stress. According to that recent nationwide Bankrate poll, that number compares with 38% of men. But the bottom line, women that are listening tonight, please know that prioritizing taking care of ourselves is the number one thing that we need to make sure we do. Let's do that. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. All right. We're going to come back with 8 o'clock hour in just a moment. It is now 7:56 here at WCCO. Thanks so much for sticking and staying with us this hour. I do want to mention that there are more than 2 in 5 women, or 46%, that say money issues have negatively affected their mental health, prompting feelings of anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and stress, according to that recent nationwide bank rate poll. That number compares with 38% of men. But the bottom line, women that are listening tonight, please know that prioritizing taking care of ourselves is the number one thing that we need to make sure we do. Let's do that. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. All right, we're going to come back with 8 o'clock hour in just a moment.